I'm Karen Hart Glass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for tuning in love. That's what we do here. We started tuning in love a while ago, and I'm sticking with it because I like it. It feels really good. And it's now 2016. Happy New Year to everyone. And we've got a lot of fun things planned here at Progressive Radio Network for our show, It's All About Food, and also at my nonprofit, ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. We're always putting up great new recipes for you, and now we're even packaging them in all kinds of fun menus, and there's just lots of delicious things in store. Now, you know I'm passionate about food, plant food, and there are some big reasons why all of us should be eating healthy, whole plant foods. We go over them. We go over all the themes over and over, and there are all kinds of specific things that pop up from time to time that really reinforce this important message about eating plant foods. So the first part of the program, we're going to talk about healing with plant foods, and I'm going to invite my guest, Michael Bader. He is an avid natural foods and health researcher and author, and the co-director of the East Bay Healing Collective in Berkeley, California. He graduated from UC San Diego, where he studied and researched environmental health. And later for his master's thesis at the Cousins School of Holistic Wellness, he surveyed 200 people on their happiness and satisfaction with their nutrition and health outcomes and turned the data into a page-turner of a parable, the acclaimed novel Sweet Healing, A Whole Health Journey. Learn more about Sweet Healing at readsweethealing.com. Bader is also the associate producer of several hit documentaries about the natural world, food, and health, and he has been a natural health guide for 10 years. Michael, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you for having me. When you said, hello, everybody, I almost said hello back to you.
Well, you're supposed to. Hello, everybody.
Okay. Hello, everybody.
I mispronounced your name. Tell us how we pronounce your name.
Oh, you got it. Bader.
Bader. Okay. That's, what origin is that?
Oh, that's like a shortening of a Bedarsky.
Bedarsky.
Yeah.
Cool. So. Okay. I always like, I just curious about names and language and pronunciation. It's fascinating. And the point of it is just like everything, literature, language, food, it's all dynamic. It's all changing. And we continue to make everything better, I'd like to think.
Yeah, that's a great segue into what I want to talk about.
Also, making things better.
Yeah, and people who like to go for it in terms of making things better. I'm sure there's people listening to us who are go for it kind of people. And they're part of who I wrote Sweet Healing for.
That's nice. You know, I want to think that we can all go for it. And sometimes there's an incubation period. I was just thinking, for many years, especially, I live in New York right now, and I'm from New York, but I was living in California for about 9 years, and I used to commute to the office, like many people do, and the traffic was horrible, and I would listen to the radio all the time, NPR and some other progressive stations, and then when I came to New York, I listened to WBAI and variety of different stations. And during that time, I think of it as it was somewhat of an incubation period for me. I was learning all kinds of things. And now I'm doing my own program and other people are listening. And some people want to go for it, but sometimes they need that period.
Oh, so you went for it and you had your own incubation period, right?
Of course, we all, you know, some are shorter than others, but, you know, sometimes we just need to listen for a while until it hits us over the head.
That's right. That's actually exactly the foundation of part of the plot, where it really took. I mean, I started off with describing letting the characters reveal themselves to be very kind of normal, you know, great in some areas, totally struggling in other areas, just like all of us. And I saw them as potentially go for it people, just like I see everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Okay, let's back up a little bit, Michael Bader. I said that right, right? Bader.
Yes, Karen Hartglass, which is a lovely name in its own right.
Karen with a C.
And yes. Hartglass, which is I see your feelings and your heart and your love inside this glass.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, the heart glass.
I like the name Hartglass. There aren't many of us, and we recently celebrated. We had a reunion, a Hartglass family circle. We hadn't had one in over 50 years. and it was kind of fascinating to reunite. But it's a very unusual name, and so anyone who has it is my cousin.
I believe that.
Yeah, anyway, so let's start. Let's back up in time here.
Yeah.
How did you get on your own whole health journey?
Yeah, thankfully, I was exposed in increments throughout my life. My father actually grew a garden, and we ate vegetables out of it sometimes. And from that foundation, I always had a inclination towards like how nice it felt to eat like that. Mm-hmm. But I also certainly ate plenty of fried, processed, garbage, packaged fast food, especially as I got into college, more and more fast food. I started to feel the effects that weren't so great. And I got into filmmaking as my first storytelling experience was making a documentary. And in that process, I met some artists. And one day I asked this artist out to have a meeting, and I offered her some what I was eating. And she was like, "Nah, no thanks." You know, I thought it was pretty healthy actually, but she was like, "You know, I eat like plants and mostly raw vegetables." And I was like, "Wow, never heard of that," you know?
Yeah.
I actually admired her spark, her creativity, her way of like, she just showed up, and I inquired more, and soon I was actually attending foodie type of events, listening to lectures, and trying out. And I remember 2 weeks into eating all plants myself, also unprocessed, I just like couldn't believe it how different I felt after 5 years of college and basically eating whatever I could. I just like, this is real. Like, I want to actually, it was literally like scream from the rooftops kind of experience.
Yeah.
That I made my next documentary, the next major one on the subject of transitioning from a junk food, you know, fast food type of lifestyle to one that was full of sprouts and vegetables and fruits and seeds and nuts. And the documentary was a big hit. And I lived at a center where I taught this stuff. And I learned, like you said, from the Cousins School of Holistic Wellness. Dr. Gabriel Cousins is one of my people that I credit for my education. And he's the author of Conscious Eating and There Is a Cure for Diabetes. And so in my own life and in the people that I coached, hundreds of people that I facilitated and filmed and documented and researched on that survey you were mentioning, mm-hmm. I really got a sense of what resonated for me in my own life, and the data showed resonated for a large pool of other people. And I was able to put that into a system, and with the advice of another author named Mike Chait, put it into a parable. So it's a story that takes the most happy and successful outcomes of all the people I've researched and coached and composites it and creates a story that we can relate to the characters, and they go through a real transformative journey.
Very sweet. I'm just curious, you were at UC San Diego and you researched environmental health. Can you tell us what you learned, and did that connect at all with the food that you were discovering?
I wish I did more. As a matter of fact, the school education was basic sciences, which had a lot, you know, everything from the periodic table to toxicology to atmospheric science. So the school, this might have been what you were leading to. The school was a little bit, I don't want to say quite that word, but
it gave you a foundation, and from there you were able to access other information and process it in an intelligent way. How about that?
That's right. And I was. But thankfully, to the basic sciences, what I saw in application actually made sense. I still had to do some expansion beyond the sort of simple basic sciences that I was that I learned from the classroom. And I just did my own thinking, imagine.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's the most important thing we should all learn from any of our education, is to think for ourselves. But I know there's a lot of environmental programs, unfortunately, that are not focusing on what we believe is important about the environment. It's more about logging and things that are related to profit and taking resources from the environment and making money from them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, one of the biggest ones that makes money is is the animal agriculture.
Oh yeah, ding ding ding. Yeah.
As well as GMO. So I mean, that's a whole topic, but I like focusing on what we can do. Like, it's in Calman, California right now, and that means I just had lunch. And I felt like in the greens and the food that I ate, I know that I gave myself a tick up on the chart. Whichever direction I'm going, like that led me further into health. And then I just know that there's people that each time they eat, they might be oblivious to it, but it's giving them a tick down. And I wanted to help intercept that process with a story that they would enjoy and like love to turn the pages and find out what happens next.
Well, I definitely support anything that promotes eating healthy plant foods. And I have enjoyed a number of fictional stories that do that. And we need as much as we can out there to promote the power of plants. Can I just ask you one more thing about your past? And that is, what was the Cousin School of Holistic Wellness like? And what did you study there? Is that primarily promoting a live food, raw food diet?
Yeah, well, the master's program is called a master's in spiritual nutrition, live food nutrition, and vegan nutrition, or plant-sourced only nutrition. So, and it's all under the holistic wellness umbrella. So it was a tremendously deep and rich holistic education from, you could call it like consciousness training, like actually learning how to go into being from doing and really be present to the feelings and sensations in this moment, which opens up a lot of intuition for intuitive eating and intuitive living. And definitely scientifically rigorous with all the dietary research we read and that we do multiple papers.
What is intuitive eating?
Well, we all, without even making it a fancy thing, it's very basic for us all to have intuition. It couldn't be otherwise to me. Like, we have so many skin cells, so many receptor cells that we have an intuition that we just don't necessarily even know about. And so when we come close to something that's good for us, some voice is going to like be informing us that might be healthy for us. And some voice is going to say, stay away. But we really, really cloud our perception of that with incessant media messages, consumer messages, advertising messages, and our own self-made stress. And real life events happen too. So it's, the practice is the intuition. So getting into a silence or a meditation to feel again, even if it's just for a moment, can open up a whole lot of space to make choices about what we want to eat.
Now, in your book, you mention synesthesia. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, synesthesia. I do mention that.
Yeah. Let's say that three times fast. Synesthesia. I can't. So why don't you tell us what that is and why you felt it was important to introduce into your story?
Sure. Can we have someone call in and do that three times fast?
Synesthesia, and I can't do it. I'm going to work on it. You tell us, and I'm going to practice here.
You be on mute there while you do that. Okay. I brought that into the story because right in a critical.
What is it?
Synesthesia is the experience of perceiving in one sense sensory perception something that is usually perceived in another. So, in other words, you know, hearing orange or seeing, you know, the note of C, or seeing the A minor chord or something. It's like, it's when you can smell blue. I mean, it's like when something happens and the senses get confused. And neurologists have known about this for decades, centuries. But it can be a chance to kind of momentarily rewire your experience. So I chose that as a relatively minor part of the plot, but it's when Jean, one of our protagonists, is having like sort of an existential moment with like, am I going to either basically miss my child's, you know, growing into a man and miss my grandchildren's upbringing, or I'm going to make a change in my life. Because he would die or continue to, you know, totally be basically bedridden if he didn't get awakened about his health. So he's out by nature. He's at the place in his, I'm not going to give away the whole plot, but he's at the place that's the central ground for his life. It's down by the river. It's where he always walks at the major moments of his life with his wife and Hope. Her name is Hope. And he's there. He's like really in this crisis. And he begins to see things that he couldn't normally see. Like a new dimension opens up for him. And it leads to 7 very grounded principles of how to live. But he needed that opening. And that was like a way to describe the hard to explain transitions that sometimes lead us to the path that we never expected to go on. A little bit of rewiring now and then never hurts. And that was my way of conveying that brief moment when that happened to Gene.
Hmm. Okay. I like it. And I don't know that I think it's something that it's something we haven't really developed in ourselves. And there's probably a lot more to our senses than we know. But I'm a singer, and I know that I have associated from time to time colors with sound.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's lovely, well, actually.
So I don't know, you're a musician. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. La! So you mentioned that some of the story came from this survey of 200 people that you did. Mm-hmm. Are any of them, were any of these people in the story part of people that are close to you in your life? Have you had anyone close to you that actually was affected by type 2 diabetes?
Well, my grandmother was. She passed away before I did my study. That impacted me with the subject of preserving health around me and in me.
Yes.
Also, I just recently, I had a relative pass away early in life recently, and I went to several different groups of people who get together for social reasons, and I had a friend in that one of those groups who had also type 2 diabetes, and her mother had died from it, and she was in my survey. I mean, I had participants very close to me as well as absolutely people I never heard of or never met. The 200 altogether encompass both people who went with a food-based route, a responsible eating and living route, as you would say, and those who just didn't. It wasn't their time. It wasn't their inclination. And I really was wondering, like, same country, same time frame, same culture, more or less. Like, what makes the difference between the two? Like, what is it? What is it? I'm not trying to judge anybody. So what is it that makes some people go this way and some people go that way?
I ask myself that question many times a day and have not found an answer.
Well, interesting. Well, we all do. I mean, that was a big question for me, and I just designed my survey to help me answer it. And there were lots of questions in the survey just about your attitudes and your beliefs about life, not about food, just about life and your background and like what information you just choose to digest. And I found a couple of interesting themes. Of the people with the most satisfying outcomes in their health, 2 common personality traits came out. One is their sense of personal agency. Just in their life, they show up in a way that says, I make a difference. Hmm. What I think makes a difference, what I say makes a difference, what I do makes a difference. It's the buck stops here, so to speak. And that type of responsibility, to bring it back to that,
yep,
was pervasive in their lives, their work, their family, their outlook. And it happened to play out in their food choices and their health when they were confronted with an unexpected, in this case, type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes crisis. So that was revealing. And the second one, because that didn't tell the whole story, the second part of the story was emotional honesty and acceptance and vulnerability, which means that the other key personality ingredient was people accepting where they're at. Like, damn, I don't know if I can change. I don't know. I feel totally paralyzed and a little bit ashamed and stuck with my health right now. And I don't know if I'm going to succeed with this. Like, just to name that and say that. A person who could say, I am terrified I won't get to see my children grow up. Like, people who could actually be emotionally honest, you know, or like the thought of changing my diet disgusts me in the moment. Like, people who could like just say that kind of thing. It's like kind of identify it.
Takes a lot of courage, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And the people who could be there and go into that actually had strongest correlation with the satisfying health outcomes. That, you know, choosing foods that were healthy, choosing a direction that was plant sourced, led to the greatest health outcomes. But they wouldn't have chosen that if not for those two character traits, which is very interesting to me. And now I could just.
There was one character in your book who was young, a teenager, and some of his misfortunes in life with health had to do with the fact that he was angry and just wanted to be contrary.
Mm.
And as a result, it affected him physically until he was able to get around it and see that he was hurting himself, not really anyone else.
Indeed. That's right. That's right. And he had a revelation in conversation with other people and other characters. And I'm really honored that you read the book so well,
Karen. I read everything.
Yeah.
My listeners know, anybody I have an author on, I read the book.
That's great. Yeah. So, you know, so that was Perlis. And he came into the story because the initial main characters went from discovering these foundational principles of health and integrating them, as challenging as it was for themselves, into sharing it. In order to really integrate it, then it's essential to move it through you and share it with others. And in this case, they go down to their town high school, and there, what do you know? There's this reunion with a person who was, like you said, when he was young, he was in that type of contrarian attitude, and he showed up and he thanked the initial, you know, he thanked Gene and Patrick for being there and showing him a little bit about what he was doing. And yeah, so.
Okay, well, all fiction aside, the bottom line is that there are way too many people today who have type 2 diabetes. It used to be called adult onset, and now it's affecting many of our children. And it is completely reversible. It is completely preventable. And anyone who is suffering from that needs to know it. And unfortunately, doctors aren't being candid enough, or maybe they don't know themselves. I know more and more are becoming knowledgeable, but it doesn't take much to turn it around. And it all has to do with your responsible eating and living.
Yes, it's real. Yeah. I mean, I just want to encourage people that are either patients or even doctors and health providers to come on over and like, if you want entertainment, read Sweet Healing. And if you want literature, you know, from like the medical schools, read that. But there is a community over here that's really emphasizing the nutritional foundations of true essential health. And then the old school doctors meet us and be like, hey, you're doing it like we used to do it. So, yeah. So,
what goes on at East Bay Healing Collective?
At the East Bay Healing Collective, we actually are a space that provides low rent therapeutic space for psychotherapists, massage therapists, and other types of healers in our one room, and for classes, workshops, courses, and meditation groups in our larger room. So, you can go to healingcollective.org or look us up in Berkeley if you're here, and join our community, which really supports one another.
Now, Michael, tell me, what is a typical food day for you?
For me, yeah. Well, today, typical as any, I went into my box that I get from my CSA. So that's such a convenient way to save a lot of time going into stores, which I still do, but I get a cardboard box once a week full of the local seasonal produce that grows near here. And you can look up CSA if that means anything to you, if you would like to try that.
Community supported agriculture.
Yes.
It's fun.
Totally. So I sliced up the cabbage head and I and the leek. I put in some almonds and a little bit of coconut oil. Put it on the steamer and just warmed it up a bit. After I massaged it to basically break it down, squeezed some lemon on it, and that was my lunch today.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, so what about yesterday's breakfast? I want to hear about more food.
Yesterday's breakfast, I had
make people hungry.
Yeah, you know, I had a fruit salad with for me it included a tahini, a love kiwi, it. A sliced a sliced kiwi, and a sliced banana. And then I also cleaned up the bowl with a sliced apple.
Anything with tahini is good for me.
Yeah. How about you?
Tahini.
Make me hungry for it later. Make me hungry for dinner. How about that?
Yeah, well, I'm in a big lentil mode right now. The New Year started, and I had heard that lentils are related to New Year's, or you're supposed to have lentils on New Year's. I like to have lentils all year long, but I hadn't had any for a while. And I've just been overdoing the lentils. I don't know that you could overdo them, but sometimes I just cook a pot and just eat them plain because they're just so good the way they are.
Yes.
So I just finished off a big bowl of lentil soup, and I'm good for a very long time.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And we just got a delivery. I get my local organic produce. Not all of it's local because we're here in New York and it's cold now. But I'm working with a group called, well, I'm not working with them. I pay them. But Go Organic NYC, it's a local organic food delivery service. I've done community support agriculture from time to time here. And currently this is what's working best for me because I like a lot of dark leafy green vegetables. And this way I can control how many I get, which is a lot.
Great. Awesome.
And I juice a lot. So I got to make some new juice today because my delivery came. Yay.
It's good for you. It's good for the footprint on the earth and the water usage. It's such a win-win-win.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, you're going to be in New York very soon. You've got a tour going on. What's happening?
My flight is in like 12 hours, and I'm going to land in New York. This is a call out to Go Organic NYC and a summons to everybody in New York to come to my book signings. I'll be at Rockin' Raw on Sullivan Street, the vegan restaurant there with a Cajun flavor.
Okay, now if you're going to be in New York, you have to say Rockin' Raw.
Rockin' Raw.
Nobody will know if you say raw what you're talking about. It's raw here in New York.
Believe it or not, I was born in New York, and I had that accent until I was 10. Maybe 11. And then I moved and quickly softened into a different – I softened into a different accent.
Softened, exactly. I'm just teasing. Okay, rock and raw. Right on.
Yeah.
Very good. 170
Sullivan Street. Then I'll be at Integral Yoga the next day, Jivamukti Yoga the next day, which is they're both great yoga studios with a theme in terms of diet that agrees with what we're saying. Because anybody who's a yogi out there and wants to connect their practice with responsible eating and living, I just really recommend that those two are intimately woven together, and that when we're in yoga and the eight limbs and living the yamas and niyamas of a personal conduct, you satisfy them all to a higher degree with a plant source diet.
So. Beautiful. Amen to that. Okay, well, Michael, have a very safe trip. I hope you have a lot of layers because all of a sudden it's cold here. It hasn't been cold for a while. And all the best to you. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Can I announce the website to learn more? Okay, great. Well, learn more about the tour and the book at readsweethealing.com. I hope to see you throughout the Northeast, actually Boston, Philly, and Connecticut also. So.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Karen. Great show.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
You too.
That was Michael Bedar, author of Sweet Healing, A Whole Health Journey. And now I would like to take a little minute break or two, and we'll be back in a minute or two. Thank you.
Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Bhavani. I invite you to join me for my show, I Eat Green with Bhavani, live every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, where I will share with you one of my favorite recipes and discuss topics related to food, the environment, sustainability, and invite some incredible guests on to join me. Please rate my show on iTunes. If you miss the show, no worries. You can find it 24/7 on the PRN archive at prn.fm. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Join us Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the premiere of Women's Rights in the Workplace with Jack Tuckner. That's me, when I'll be talking with you about sex discrimination in the workplace and what you can do to protect yourself. Each week, my guests and I will discuss all forms of workplace discrimination affecting women, such as your right to maternity leave, and what you need to know about workplace sexual harassment, and what to do about that harassment if it's happening to you or to someone you love. I'll take your calls and answer your questions as well. Please tune in live on Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM. If you miss the show live, you can listen at your convenience on PRN.FM at any time. And if you like what you hear, please rate the show on iTunes.
Love, lust, and laughter, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Thank you for listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Time for part two of today's It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for tuning in. Love. And a love for food that is good for us, that is nutritious, food that is gentle on the planet when we produce it, and food that doesn't cause any pain and suffering to non-human animals. That's the kind of love I want to tune in and put it out there. So next part of the program, which is the next 26 minutes or so, I wanted to talk about some not so good news, some good news, and all that comes in the middle when it comes to food. You probably have heard over the last few months about this E. coli outbreak with the Chipotle chain. And when it first came out in October, I was really sad to hear about it. Because for a fast food chain, Chipotle is probably a lot better than most, and they've been doing a lot in order to not use genetically modified food. They offer vegan options. They're moving in a positive direction, and I've been there a few times. If you've read my What Vegans Eat, if you read my What Vegans Eat blog, you've seen a number of times over the past year when we visited Chipotle. And again, it's not my favorite place, but sometimes it's helpful. The thing, my biggest complaint is, although I'm really glad they have their tofu dish, which is the sofritas, which is a filling for the burrito. For me, it's way too salty. And I just want to remind you about salt and how you can quickly tell whether something has more salt than it should. Quick rule of thumb is if you look at the serving size of any particular item, it could be a fast food item on the menu, you can get the nutrition information, or any boxed food in a store. If you look at the serving size and the calories per serving, the amount in milligrams of sodium should be the same or less. And if it's more, and if it's especially a lot more, you know you're looking at too much sodium. And so I just pulled up the Sofritas tofu filling from Chipotle, and a serving size is 4 ounces. Calories are 145 calories. And the sodium is 555. That's why I'm always grabbing for the water after I have one of those, because it's almost four to five times more than necessary of sodium in there. But I guess they probably tested it on a lot of people and found that that's what was necessary for people to like it. I don't really know. But I would like people to be recalibrating their palate to not require so much salt in food, because it's not good for you. All right, let's put that aside. So Chipotle has been in the news a lot because E. coli has found its way into a number of their stores. And it seems somewhat sad, because here's a company that makes it look like they're trying to do a better job for health and the environment. And what I wanted to bring up is, recently there was an article, maybe you've seen it, by Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. He comes out with a lot of sensational items, and he did an analysis where he said, quote, "Chipotle is a victim of corporate sabotage. Biotech industry food terrorists are planting E. coli in retaliation of the restaurant's anti-GMO menu." I want to say that this is a big mouthful. I can't say whether this is true or not true, and no one can really say it at this point in time. He is saying it's bioterrorism, and I've met people who are scientists at companies that are making genetically modified foods, and I believe the individuals, the scientists that are involved in making these products, they are not intending any harm. They may be confused about what they're making and its impact on global health and global food security. They may not have an understanding of the impact of their work and how it really affects the world, but I don't think they are intending any ill will on anyone, and certainly not knowingly planting E. coli into food that could hurt people. Now, most people who are affected by E. coli are sick with diarrhea for a week or so, but it can kill, and it can harm people that are vulnerable, like young children and some of our seniors. So implying bioterrorism is very strong. and I hope that it isn't true. So all I would like to suggest is, when you read something, take it in. But whether you respect this particular writer or not, please don't believe everything that you read. Think about it. Look around for other sources before you start posting and reposting and having something spin into something without knowing whether it's really true or not. E. coli is a dangerous thing, and it has a lot to do with animal agriculture. If we didn't have animal agriculture, if we weren't confining animals in a small space and trying to grow as many as we can for a limited cost, we wouldn't have the problems that we have today with foodborne illnesses, with E. coli and salmonella. These are a direct result of confining animals. And that's the origin of this problem. And it affects, unfortunately, our vegetables. So for those of us who are not eating animals, we are still affected, because often the animal manure is spread on the fields that are growing vegetables, even organic vegetables, unless you're getting your produce from a veganic farm, and I wish there were more of them. Veganic farms do not use any animal products in growing their plants. So they don't use manure, they don't use bones to nourish the soil. Right. So I hope the best for Chipotle. They have on their website, chipotle.com/update, their explanations of what is going on. And I believe that they're doing whatever they can to keep things clean and tidy. And I just hope it all works out, and I really hope that there is no bioterrorism involved. That would really be sad. Now, you know, I'm not saying everybody's innocent and sweet, and I wouldn't put it past corporations to do all kinds of strange things. I mean, we remember also in October, around the same time Chipotle first had this E. coli problem, we heard about the American Egg Board. I talked about it on this program, where they may have violated federal laws using public funds in order to stop Hampton Creek from selling its eggless mayonnaise. You remember Hampton Creek? We interviewed Josh Tetrick on the show several years ago when Hampton Creek began. But they are a company that is creating egg products without using eggs. They're using plant-based materials in order to create an ingredient that can be used in industrial foods in the place of eggs. It's genius. It costs less than eggs, than chicken eggs, and it's healthier for us, and it's gentler on the environment, and it's making companies like Unilever, the creator of Best Foods mayonnaise and Hellmann's mayonnaise, very, very uncomfortable. And so now the USDA is investigating the American Egg Board to see if they have indeed used public funds to stop Hampton Creek from being so successful. It's fascinating. So we know that corporations will go into that gray area and do what they can to keep the money flowing in their direction. All right. So that's Chipotle. Now, meanwhile, this kind of leads me to labeling, of course, because genetically modified foods, which Chipotle has said they will not serve at their restaurants. When we talk about genetically modified foods, the word labeling comes right into it because we want to know, most of us do, want to know what foods are genetically modified so we can make an intelligent choice if we want genetically modified organisms in our food. And the government seems, the federal government at least, seems to be going away from labeling. And the states are, some of the states are together in order to label products whether they contain GMOs or not. And that's what the public wants. Well, here's another labeling issue. Perhaps you've heard about it. I think we need more labeling. I love data. I love more information. I think we should know where our food comes from. And unfortunately, at the end of December, we had a cool label. It was the country of origin labeling. And it has been around for a couple of years, and it follows a lot of meat products to find out where they come from. I'm sure that the origins of that came from when we had a big outbreak of mad cow disease, and people wanted to know where their beef came from because they didn't want to be eating mad cow and infected animals. Well, back in December 2015, just a few weeks ago, our Congress here in the United States repealed the country of origin labeling, cool labeling, for muscle cuts of beef and pork and ground beef and pork. And it has to do with the World Trade Organization and trading with other countries, and other countries have been complaining about this labeling because for them it's not as economically beneficial. They want to be able to sell all of their meats to us, and if people can decipher where things come from, they may be less likely to buy from a certain country. Some people want to buy local plants or animals. People want to know where their food comes from, and I would prefer to buy as local as possible, as close to my home as possible, for lots of reasons. And as companies and corporations become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, it's more dangerous because they'll have food products, could be animal products, could be plant products, and they sell them to other companies, and then those companies put those ingredients into their products, and then they get packaged and sent somewhere else. And that's what makes foodborne illness so complicated, because little bits of different foods are in products that are moving all over the planet, literally. And if there's something that's contaminating, it's really hard to go all the way to the original source. Well, it's hard if things aren't labeled. And I think this is not a good move, and we should be moving towards more labeling and not less. So that was not good news. No. But let's talk about some good news. Have you heard of the four-time NBA champion, John Sally? He's a vegan. He actually has a new vegan show titled The Big V with John Sally, and that's at Z420.tv. And he just put out an open letter to Michelle Obama a couple days before the end of the year, and he asked that the First Lady take the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals 30-Day Veg Pledge to set an example for families across the country. I'm not sure how she will respond to this. I do know that before Michelle and Barack took office, they were working with a trainer in Chicago who was vegan, and I believe he went along with them. So they have plenty of exposure to the vegan diet. But it would be really a wonderful thing for someone in the White House to be eating vegan, wouldn't it? I look forward to that. And it's always fabulous when popular professional athletes go vegan and they talk about how it's the best thing that they ever did and how their performance is better and how they feel better. Because a long time ago, the few of us who were vegetarian, the image of vegetarians was always how thin and weak we were, but we weren't. It was just a perception. And now as more people dig into the power of plants, we see what's really going on. Plant foods are good for our muscles, and for our brains, and for our hearts, and for our fingers and our toes, and our toenails, and our hair, and everything else. And here's another bit of good news. I haven't been able to visit Moby's Little Pine restaurant in Los Angeles. Have you? I've only heard wonderful things about it. Well, not only is it wonderful that this delicious restaurant is out there in the world, but Moby is giving all of his profits from this restaurant to a number of animal organizations, vegan organizations like the Humane Society, Farm Sanctuary, Sea Shepherd, PETA, Animal Legal Defense Fund. So now when you eat at the Little Pine, not only are you doing a good thing for yourself by eating good, healthy, plant-based foods, but you're also helping some of the big organizations that are promoting this very, very important message. That's good. And I love when people with means, celebrities that have the attention of the public, make choices for global good. I wish they all did. Moby is a cool dude. All right, it is January. Happy January, January 5th. This is a time of resolutions. It's time to make new plans, time to try to lose weight again, time to add more exercises into our lifestyle. And the unfortunate thing is that most people who make these plans don't stick to them. So I hope if you are indeed wanting to improve your diet and get your diet healthier and you want to exercise more, I want you to stick to it. And if there's anything that I can do to help, I will try my best. You can always send me an email at info@realmeals.org. I also offer a coaching program for individuals who need extra individual help, and some people do, and I'm doing what I can to help in that department. We will be putting out some January inspirational menu plans for you shortly. But here's a couple of things that I wanted you to keep in mind. You know, the great thing about cooking, I'm always telling people to find their kitchen, right? Not only is it good because you learn about what's in your food, and as I was mentioning before with salt and reading labels, you can control how much salt is in your food. You can control how much sugar and oil is in your food when you are preparing it yourself. These are all really important things. So not only are you making less expensive meals for you and your family when you cook at home, but you could make more quality choices, make it organic, make it quality fresh food that is high in nutrients. But there's another benefit. When you're moving, when you're on your feet, when you're walking around, preparing food usually is a physical activity. You're using your body, you're standing up, you're walking around, you're going from the refrigerator to the counter, even if you have a small kitchen. You're moving and you're standing and you're working. And anything that increases your physical activity during the day is good. Too many Americans today are sitting on the couch or sitting in their office, and I recommend looking for more ways to move. Simple things. I don't have a car. I live in New York City, and fortunately, there are stores all around. I don't go to the closest stores. I go to the stores that have the food that I like. So that could mean a 20, 30-minute walk to the health food stores that I like, and then coming back home, carrying those bags. But I don't think of it as an inconvenience. I think of it as part of my healthy, vibrant life, and I'm moving and using my body. We want to get in 10,000 steps a day at least, right? So part of your focus in January and to improve and get healthier and move, think of the things that you can do that require moving, where you might be taking taking a choice that is a little easier on the body, but ultimately in the long run isn't the best thing for you. Walk, move, lift. It's great to get to the gym, but we need to move around all the time. We are meant to move. I'm thinking about my niece that I just visited, and she's 10, and she's really into gymnastics. And we're all standing around or sitting in each other's company, and she's just nonstop motion, flipping and splitting and back bends and forward bends. And I'm thinking, I want to do that. Somehow as adults, we can't get away with all of that that children can. But moving is so important. And the other thing is, I mentioned last week we were just getting over colds, really bad. I don't know how it happened, but it happened, and fortunately I'm over it now. But I didn't make any New Year's Eve plans, so when it came around to New Year's Eve, we were feeling better, and we decided we'd have a nice little at-home New Year's Eve celebration, and Gary and I got to cooking. Well, the good thing is we keep our pantry stocked with essentials, so we didn't have to think, okay, we want to make something and we have to go to the store now to get it. The essentials are always there, and we were able to create a really wonderful meal just from the foods that we always have at home. And we'll be putting together in the next few days what our essentials are. And you can take a look at that and think about how that might apply to the foods that you like. But it's really good to be organized and keep your kitchen stocked so that you can make the foods you want to make, the healthy foods that you want to make, rather than finding yourself snacking or grabbing for foods when you're hungry that aren't really what you want to eat. And we did have actually a lovely New Year's Eve. We made, actually Gary made a lasagna with a homemade sauce and a homemade vegan mozzarella cheese. It was really spectacular. And then I made my flourless chocolate cake. And if you haven't tried it, I really recommend it. It's a great recipe. It's very easy. And it's gluten-free, of course, because it doesn't have flour. It's almond-based. I haven't made it with anything other than almonds, but I'm sure it would be quite lovely with a seed, for example, if you couldn't eat almonds. For people who have nut allergies, it probably works just as nicely with sunflower seeds. It's a great recipe. And it's fun. It's fun to make. And we just finished eating it. It's another great thing about cooking at home is that if you do it right and you make big quantities, you have leftovers, and that makes it so much easier in the days to come. It's cold outside, and when it's cold outside, now I know in Australia it's not cold, and in other parts of the world it's not cold, but here in the East Coast in New York City it's cold, and so I'm thinking about foods that warm. We're drinking a lot of hot tea here and a lot of big soups, and soups, like I just mentioned before, I'm just eating a pile of lentils. Very, very satisfying and very, very easy to make. So I think that brings this It's All About Food Tuning in Love program just about to a close. And I wanted to remind you to visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. And it's the new year. Say hello. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. Tell me what you've enjoyed about this program. Tell me what you'd like to hear. Any questions or comments you may have, I welcome them. So I hope you all have great success with your resolutions, great success with including more plant foods in your life and improving your health. We should all feel good and experience joy. So tune in, love. And have a delicious week.